Classic business, innovation and competitiveness.
The Innovation and Competitiveness feature on Classic Business is brought to you by Wits University. From telling the story of life to finding solutions to deep-level mining problems, Wits is at the forefront. I was looking through the Bank of America Merrill Lynch Future Tech Primer the other day, a very interesting report, and they examined potential future technologies that could transform our lives and impact $13 trillion worth of industry. And examining the next potential moonshots, I think, is more important than ever if you consider that only 4% of companies created 100% of net wealth since 1926. Wow. How's that for concentration? They mentioned 15 radical technologies that are likely to change our lives, things like quantum computing and the Hyperloop and nanosatellites, even 6G, and we're still trying to get our heads around 5G. So against this backdrop, how is the science of business and the practice of business in the digital era evolving from how we practice it to how we teach it in things like business schools? So someone who thinks very deeply about this is adjunct professor Brian Armstrong, the BCX chair of digital business at Wits Business School, who joins us again. Professor, always good to chat to you.
Michael, it's always great to be here.
Now, if you take the Harari view, and I've been reminding listeners that I've just finished his 21 Lessons in the 21st Century, we might as well give up now because we're all going to be automated by the network effects of technology. Mm. It certainly doesn't feel like it's going to be that bad.
Well, there's always been this tension between when we talk about the future of work, there's always been this diversity of opinion between the dystopian view and a somewhat more utopian view. And I think the truth is always somewhere in between. There is no that automation and next generation technologies are going to transform almost every job in one way or another. It's also very true that if we look at a task level, the number of tasks which you and I perform in our daily lives, many of them will be automated. The question is how many careers and professions and overall jobs, which are collections of tasks, will actually be automatable. And there, most scholars would agree the number is somewhere between 20 and maybe even 50% in the worst case scenarios. What people can't agree on is how many new jobs will be created that we haven't even conceived of yet. Mm. And what are the necessary conditions to make sure those new jobs actually materialize? But I think the reality is that I think we are, particularly in emerging markets, we are going to face employment challenges, which we need to get ahead of the curve in thinking about how to deal with. And at an individual level, and as managers and leaders in business, we need to understand how this is going to change our worlds and what we as individuals and business leaders can do to prepare and respond.
And that reminds me of what's happening in the banking sector at the moment. We're seeing a lot of job losses, jobs that are lost to robotic process automation. And it's understandable. Business is going to take advantage of the latest efficiencies and the latest technology. But are we seeing enough effort and emphasis being placed on providing an opportunity for reskilling or retraining of those individuals who are laid off?
Well, firstly, let me come to your first point about, you know, the banks are doing it and it's almost a non-negotiable. They have to do it. I think the key point is if you're working in a globally competitive industry, there's two reasons why you have to do it. If your competitors are out there in the world and we have to be competitive, and to do that we need to automate, we got to do it. The second is if your customers are asking you to change the way you do things because it's more convenient and it's more aligned with what they want. And particularly in the banking sector, that latter dynamic is very true. Customers are saying, I don't want to go into branches anymore. I want to do things in a zero touch, instant gratification mode like most people want. And therefore the banks have to change and respond to the market. And robotic process automation is one of the dynamics at play there. What I do think is important, though, is that we know this is coming. This is not a surprise. And reskilling and repurposing employees or finding alternative opportunities for them shouldn't be an afterthought that comes up at the 11th hour. Oh, dear, we have a few thousand people that now we have to make a plan with. It should be something that is strategically considered as part of the business transformation process from the very beginning. And I think then we could actually make more progress in appropriately reskilling people, redeploying people. But even then, there will always be some people that will be, you know, negatively affected.
Yeah, it's Joseph Schumpeter and those creative waves of destruction. Prof, wait right there. We just have to cross to Pusaletso for the latest news.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Welcome back to the Innovation and Competitiveness feature brought to you by Wits University. I've got Professor Brian Armstrong, the Chair of Digital Business at Wits Business School, in studio. And Brian, we're talking about the future of work. And to contextualize this in South Africa, we were talking about how banks have been responding to things like robotic process automation. It's inevitable. But what is really driving this? Because we often think about automation just being driven by a bottom line issue. It's just all costs. It's not so.
It shouldn't be so. I think sometimes it is, but it shouldn't be so. The real reason you automate is that people make mistakes. In many roles, computers don't. People are affected by how we feel. If we're in a bad mood, if we had a bad night last night, if we had a fight with our spouse before going to work, and if we had, you know, if our kids are giving us grief, we're affected by how we feel. There's a lot of hard evidence about this, by the way. We are slow with many things. We are costly to scale. So automation actually drives quality up. It drives performance up in many customer value metrics. Oh, and by the way, if you do it right, you might save some money. That's really the reason we want to automate. Isn't primarily to save money, but it's about achieving all these other business benefits. Now, but there's a very important point I'd like to make here. So we all want to automate. We want to offer zero touch, instant gratification to our customers, and that's what our customers are asking for. But when things go wrong, what we have to have is we have to have a friendly, helpful, competent person for your second and third line of support, because that is still where computers are falling over. They haven't got the capability to do all the exception management, the fallout management, and handle angry customers.
So we're talking about white-collar workers, which is really where we see a lot of the threat side of the equation. What about the skills gap that we're seeing in some of the more blue-collar spaces? Are we educating and training enough artisans and crafts and technical people to address our needs for the fourth industrial revolution era? Or are we just only churning out degree-qualified people that South Africa cannot afford, really?
I think in the short term, the short-term impacts of automation are going to be felt in some blue-collar work categories, but certainly in the routine white-collar work categories. That is where the immediate pressure is, and it's going to get worse, not better. Now, in terms of the skills that we need to prepare, certainly we've spoken about it before, the whole idea of emphasizing artisanal roles, roles that are high in unstructured dexterity, roles that are high in relational intelligence, roles that are high in creative intelligence, those computers struggle with at the moment, and they will continue to. But I think for me, an important thing is to think about a slightly more strategic, structured approach to skills. And one that we've been developing at the university based on some work from OECD and other places is really these four layers of skills. There's what we would call the ICT specialist skills. So those were the old-fashioned ones like coding and database management and network management and security. But now you can add cloud and microservices and containerization. The second level is where things get particularly scarce and problematic in business at the moment, which is digital-specific skills, AI, data science, design thinking, UX and UI, but also things like social analytics, mobility applications, and so on. So those are digital-specific skills. Then, though, what we need to recognize is those don't exist in isolation. The next level down is what we call the digital enabling skills. And these are the good old-fashioned soft skills like complex problem solving, communication, collaboration, creativity, determination. And these things, all the scholars and all the research suggest these are becoming more important in a digital world, not less important. But the point where I wanted to get to is then we get what we call the foundational skills. And foundational skills are really in two categories. The first is digital literacy, which is familiarity with devices. It is about how to do independent and intentional navigation of the internet. And that we can teach. And the other foundational skills are literacy and numeracy. There's a huge correlation between digital empowerment and digital participation and literacy and numeracy. Now, we could say that's the government's problem. I think firms can do interventions in their businesses to improve the foundational skills of their broader workforce. Because if we can improve the digital empowerment of 16 million employed people in South Africa, that can hopefully rub off onto the other 4.2 people per household that those people interact with. And I think that could be a material contribution. Yes, the government has to fix education. Yes, as universities, we've got to update our curricula to be relevant for the digital era. But I was speaking to a firm yesterday who employs several thousand people, and the question is, what can they do to make sure that their staff are more digitally empowered and not on the wrong side of the digital divide?
And that's certainly the big question I'd like to leave with listeners tonight. Adjunct Professor Brian Armstrong, Chair of Digital Business at Wits Business School, with this week's Innovation and Competitiveness feature here on Classic Business in partnership with Wits University. From searching for the Higgs boson to understanding the complexities of human interaction, Wits is at the forefront.